You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello there and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. I hope you guys are keeping safe and well during this lockdown, that this podcast is bringing you some light relief during what is a troubling time. What I've got for you now is a very special interview with a very special player. Tony Green played for Newcastle United in the early 70s, and although he only turned out a total of 39 times for the club, he's considered by many to be one of the best to have ever played in the black and white stripes. I caught up with him, socially distancing, to find out about his time on Tyneside and that career-ending injury which forced him from the top of the game into teaching. So sit back and enjoy. How are you doing in lockdown? What have you been up to? It's a bit of a strange time, isn't it?
Yeah, I've probably done more in the house than I've done in the previous 50 years. I've just been doing the house and doing brickwork and painting the fence and things like that.
I put a tweet out the other day just saying, can you pass me your memories of Tony Green? And the word legend was used quite a lot, and you're well remembered. I'll just read out some of the tweets and just then we'll just get your reaction to some of them. Someone said, if it was not for injury, he would have been up there with War Jackie as one of our greatest ever. The bloke was an absolute genius. Power, pace, trickery, and an eye for a pass and a fair amount of tenacity. What do you make of those tweets then? I mean, it must be nice to hear those compliments.
Yeah, it's lovely. I mean, it is nice after all these years. I mean, it's nearly 50 years since I played. So, you think people will forget after 50 years, wouldn't you? Because I didn't play that often, so... I get quite, when I go up there, it's the only place I get quite emotional. When I see St. James's and everything, I get quite emotional about the whole place. Newcastle's a place where, I don't know, that you either take to the place and love it, or you're like a fish out of water, and there's some great players struggled there. I don't know why, and I think if you like it there, it's a fantastic place to play. So I just loved playing in the big crowds. I thought it was terrific.
And like we said, we mentioned there, I mean, only the 33 games and then obviously the injury struck. When you left Newcastle, and did you ever expect people would still be holding you in such high regard?
No. I think we were all, because football said a new lease of life with television. I think you just assume when you finish football, that's you finished. And I think you're always hearing stories about ex-players turning up looking for tickets. So I always say, don't ask me why, but there was something in the back of my head that says, I'll never do that. But then you get kids and they wanted to go, so you gradually get drawn back.
Can you tell me then about the move to Newcastle, obviously, when you first got the call to say, you know, Joe Harvey wants you up at Newcastle?
Yeah, well, I get tapped three times, and somebody said to me on the Saturday, I'm from the Sporting Times, could I have a word? And he said to me, Don Revie is after you for Leeds. But I'd heard stories about Don Revie after quite a lot of players and nothing ever happened. And then I think we played, the last game we played, I played for Blackpool, we played in the League Cup against Villa. And after the game, Bob Stoker says, Joe Harvey wants to see you. And I liked Joe straight away, because he was just this blunt Yorkshireman. And I liked him straight away, so I just virtually signed. And that was it. I played in signed on Wednesday and I played on the Saturday.
And what was Joe like to work with? You know, obviously he came across as this kind of sergeant major kind of type. He'd been in the army. He came across very brutish. But was he like that when you got to know him? Was he?
No, he wasn't sergeant major. He's very opposite. he probably, if he had a weakness, he wasn't too strict. You know, like he would, I've told before, we were playing Arsenal, and somebody says, what about Alan Ball? And he was just walking by me and he says to me, you're a better player than Alan Ball. And just carried on walking. And you think, oh, he thinks I'm better than Ball. And don't ask me why, but it makes you feel good. And he had a knack of doing things like that, Joe.
That's one thing that always comes out about Joe is that John Gibson always tells the example of with Supermac, he didn't need to encourage Malcolm. But with someone like Terry Hibbert, for example, he had to, you know, encourage him, you know, you're a great little player. It seemed to have that knack for man management.
Yeah, it was very good. It was you like playing for him. I love playing for him. You know, he's he wasn't too you know, negative about anything. You know, and really, to be fair, Keith Birkinshaw did most of the coaching and the team talks. But Joe came in and said he's too, you know, he's whatever he thought. And it was always good. It was always good to listen to.
And we mentioned Malcolm there, obviously. I mean, you would have been supplying the passes for Malcolm. What was it like to have someone up top of, you know, Supermax kind of stature who you knew 9 times out of 10 of the ball got to Supermac, it was heading in?
Oh, yeah. It was, I'd say for a couple of years, it was the best centre forward in Britain. I mean, you can't say the world because you don't know. But I mean, he was terrific. I mean, his all-round game wasn't the best, but it didn't matter. He's if you give him a chance, he'd finish it and he would go. You know, there'd be boots flying and he'd put his head where the boots were. So he'd be very, very brave, Supermac.
And that team that you were part of, I mean, we had some exciting players, and yourself included. You had, you know, Bob at the back, you Frank Clark, you had Terry Hibbert. I mean, it must have been an exciting time to be at Newcastle.
Yeah, it was. I mean, really, well, I only played a year, but I mean, Terry Hibbert was. I mean, he was a steal. He cost about 20,000, and I think. I think it was only because he couldn't get a game, and Terry, he was lovely bloke, but if he had a chip on his shoulder, he couldn't hide it. So I think he used to call Reavy a fat so-and-so and things like this. So I think Reavy was glad to get rid of him, but I mean, he was a steal for 20,000. He was absolutely terrific for that sort of money.
They say that Terry could start an argument in an empty house.
Oh, he could, yeah. I mean, he lived there. I used to go to the Bay Horse with him in Dinnington, and he'd even argue with the punters there, you know. And I remember playing against Wolves, and I gave him a pass, and he sort of shrugged. And after the game, I said to him something, and he answered me back. And then Malcolm McDonald got involved. And then before I knew it, the whole dressing room was in a furore. And then the next thing, Terry comes over and says, you've not met my brother, have you? I says, no. He says, come on. So me and Terry go up to have a drink with his brother, and everybody else is arguing in the changing rooms. And he was a lovely bloke, but he could start a fight in an empty house.
And what was it like having someone like, you know, Bob at the back and Clarkie as well?
Well, to be honest, I mean, there was three. There was Ollie Burton who got injured, but Ollie Burton, Pat Howard and Bob, the three of them were terrific. Nowadays, they'd probably play with the three of them and Davy Craig and Frank Clark, because the two of them were terrific players as well. So, I mean, I know the whole, I mean, in those days, you had to play with a back four. I don't know why, but you had two at the back and two fullbacks. But probably nowadays, they'd have played with those three, and that would have been as good as most teams would have in the top division.
Let's talk about some of the memories that you've got of Newcastle. Someone mentioned there the Manchester United game where you left George Best chasing you. Is that a memory that stands out for you, that I think it was 2-0 victory?
To be honest, I forgot all about it, and I was up there with my wife about 5 years ago when I got a taxi, and the taxi driver had it in his phone. And he's talking to me, and I'm panicking because he wasn't even looking at the road. He's showing me this, maybe knocking George Best in his backside. So I never saw it till 5 years ago. So the taxi driver showed me it.
And what did it, I mean? What kind of memories did that bring back?
Well, again, I get quite touched that 45 years later, he's carrying a little thing of me. You know, so he must have thought it was great when I jumped in his taxi to get out this phone. And so I get quite touched with the whole situation, to be honest.
And the game before that was the Hereford game, the FA Cup game. And I mean, what was that like to play in? Because I mean, that now even still, every time the FA Cup comes around, it's always shown in the high. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's ever going to get forgotten.
To be honest, it was cancelled. They were a better side than non-league because they took West Ham to 3 games the next round, but the game shouldn't have been played. It was it wouldn't be played nowadays. We were in Hereford for somewhere near there for about a week. So we went to play on the Saturday, and it was the following Saturday before we played. So I don't think they would play it nowadays. But having said that, you've got to adjust. We were probably the better side, but they get the goal, so that was it.
And there's a little rumour, whether it's true or not, that you were standing next to the goal scorer and urged him on to shoot.
That was Roger Hunt and Gordon Banks. If I was with A2, you know, we did the pools panel. Every time they used to call us a wee man, and every time they showed that, Banksy would say, "Oh, there he's telling me to shoot," and Roger would go, "Go on, shoot, you shoot." So it all started from them two. So every time they showed it, they claimed that I was saying, "Go on, shoot, you'll never score from there." But it's all lies. I don't believe a word they say.
What was, I mean, the turnaround, obviously, from that game to the Man United game, and to go and then beat Man United when you expected to lose, was that done within the kind of group of players saying, like, we've got to show how good we are? Was that down to Joe Harvey kind of again trying?
No, to be honest, I was quite surprised because I still get talked about, but nobody ever give us. You know, I walked down the road in Newcastle and nobody shouted at me, and I remember thinking, if I was in Blackpool, I'd get a bit of stick for losing to a non-league club. I mean, everybody's, you know, they just say, "Oh, you tried your hardest." And I was quite touched by the whole situation. So that was as good an incentive as any. But you don't need an incentive, you know, to play every week. But I was quite touched by the fact that I don't think any of the lads get that much stick, you know. We've had more stick since it finished years later than we did at the time.
When you moved to Newcastle, did you understand how much the game means to people up here? Or was that kind of something you had to learn as you went on in your time there on Tyneside?
No, I knew they always get big crowds, but I just didn't realise how, immersed they were in it. And I get the first, because there was no like match of the day where, I mean, I came here and I knew Davy Craig, I knew Frank Clark, but I couldn't put faces to names because nowadays, if you play, you see everybody on television all the time, don't you? You only see a few games in match of the day. So there was no sort of, and then I got off the train, I think the Saturday, and everybody started to chant my name, and I thought, well, how do they know? You know, I've only played once for them at Everton. So, I realised then, walking up to St James's Park, it got to me then. It still gets to me, to be honest, when I go up there.
Because you were up here a few years ago, like you've said then, and you went to the Strawberry, and I think you signed. There's a little portrait of you. What was that like to kind of, because it's one thing being told you're still remembered and and everything, but I suppose to see something like that on arguably the most famous pub in Newcastle.
Yeah, it was dead nice.
What was that like?
Well, I went with, you know, Bill Gibbs. I don't know if you know him. He runs a Fears club. I went with Bill and he just says, he was an ex-player. And the girl behind the bar, I think her and her husband ran it. She says, "Oh, your pictures up here. And they're the best players in the last so many years." And I was in the top 10 or whatever it was. She says, "Would you sign?" I said, "Oh, yeah." And again, I get quite emotional. I find it terrific. You know, I enjoy, like, if I never get recognised, it wouldn't bother me, but when I do, I enjoy it. I must admit.
When you were injured and it was a tackle and the knee came off, your knee came off worse. Can you just explain a bit about what happened then? What your initial reaction was to the challenge?
Well, I knew it was bad because I think I chased Mel Blythe, and I wasn't a good tackler, but I was quick enough to just, I could nick the ball out away from people. You know, I could chase back and just, if they just gave me a glimpse of the ball, I could, and I think I just tried to do that, and he just nudged me, and I just went over, and the whole thing went, there was no blame, and, you know, it wasn't his fault, to be fair to him. And I knew it was serious because I could feel the whole thing. It was really painful, and I knew the slit stretcher was coming. I knew it was serious.
And I mean, it's such a shame because I mean, today you would have been, you know, probably into surgery, and then you would have been okay, and you probably were recovered. But back then, it was, you were kind of doing sprints and what have you. Is that correct?
Yeah, there was they put a splinter to keep my legs straight, and Rutherford was the vice chairman, and he said, they can't operate because it's hot. No, I don't know anything. Now, everybody else, you know, they have an injury like that. It happens on a Saturday. They got operated on a Sunday. So me and Tommy Gibb, Tommy's come back from injury. We were running up and down the terracing, and then I'd go back and put this splinter on. And to be honest, I went to a Sunderland match, and the Sunderland surgeon looked at me and says, "You need an operation. You've got to." And that was about 7 weeks after I'd done it. He says, "It's not getting any better." He says, "Oh, you need an operation." So back and then I got an operation, the one that used to look after Blackpool at Writington. And I'm not sure if arthritis. I played in against Coventry reserves. Tommy Hutchison came because I played with Tommy. And Ian St John was a coach there. And I played well, and I thought, this is great. I was back again. I phoned home and said, I'm right as rain. And I got up the next morning, and I couldn't move it. It was stiff. So arthritis must have set in.
And I mean, that was just must have been devastating for you to then kind of have that realisation that you were never going to reach the heights.
Yeah, it was... Well, you think you go silly for a bit, you know. But when I look back, probably they talk about therapy, but I think the Newcastle supporters were my therapy, to be fair to them. They were all terrific, and, you know, the testimonial. And Joe Harvey came in and he says, they had a league game on a Saturday, and he says, what team do you want for Friday night? And I said, well, he says, oh, no, he says, there'll be thousands of league games after this. So everybody was really nice to us, and that helped a bit. It didn't help a bit, but you know what I mean.
And I mean, there's some lovely quotes from Joe as well, you know, saying, after they made Tony Green, they threw away the mould. I couldn't hope to buy a similar player, not even for twice that amount.
Well, I know. I'd had to console him when they told us I was finished. There was me, Fenton, I don't know if Fenton Braithwaite was a surgeon, and Joe Harvey, we went, and Joe was worse than me when he heard, I said, it's okay, Joe. He was really upset. Well, I was upset. We were all upset.
So what, you had to kind of console Joe?
I had to console Joe. He was really upset about it. And then when he used to see him, you know, if we're out socially, he used to come up and say to me, God, if I could get another 5 years out of you, that would have been unbelievable. And I used to walk away feeling great. You know, so we always got on smashing.
And what happened afterwards? I mean, you became a teacher?
Yeah, I went. Well, I'd done a year at university before I stayed on at school till I was 18, at the year at university. So I didn't know what to do, but I had qualifications. So I just went to teacher training college for 3 years and became a math teacher.
And I mean, that's quite the change in career. I mean, did you manage to actually teach any maths, or did the kids just want to know about your football career?
Well, to be honest, at first of all, it was all football. But then I did a teaching practice at Wickham, and there was about 40 kids outside the door asking for an autograph. I was really embarrassed. And then you know, the sands of time, you know, like, even when I finished about 13 years ago, people just vaguely, you know, they said, were you a footballer, my dad, you know. So it, the longer the time goes, people sort of, kids aren't engrossed in it as much.
Are you kind of like taken back by the comments of just how good people say you were?
Yeah, well, when my wife first went up to Newcastle, the first match she went to, we were driving back, we got into the M6, and she says, you realise, as from now, you're a normal person. Because she was that used to people coming up and talking, and because she wasn't with us when I was at Newcastle. So she was quite amazed at the reaction of people.
If you say the next big signing they make and you get a chance to sit down with them, what would be the one thing you'd tell them about dealing with the pressure of Newcastle United? What would be the advice you'd give them?
Well, to be honest, I think as long as they see you trying, you know, if they think you've given 100%, you know, it's ones that they think, if they don't think you've given 100%, you know, they'll not be as fond of you. But if, I think as long as you give 100%, they're quite happy that you're doing that.
Is there a one memory, one game that sticks out for you at Newcastle United that, you know, that you'd like to share, the kind of the one story that always sticks in the back of your mind?
You know, because I did the pools panel and we used to have a meal and it's have two drinks in the bar and then we'd go a wander. There's this Newcastle supporter used to come and join us and then we'd have a drink, the four of us, his wife. And then the last day he came and we were just leaving. He says, can I have a picture? And I says, I'll go and get the lads. He says, I don't want them. He says, just me and you. So Roger Hunt, the two World Cup players, he just said, I don't want them, just me and you. So I just posed with him. His wife took the picture and I found that amazing.
Injured at such a young age and kind of yet to reach your peak, how was it difficult for you in the first kind of few weeks, few months to deal with that? Or were you kind of just like, right, this has happened, I'm going to have to?
No, I think it takes you a long time. I mean, I'm going to guess, say, 6 months. And then you just got to say, really? And just say, I've got to go on, mate. You can't moan like this all your life. And, you know, probably needed, you know, you had to have a few beers before I went to sleep or that, and it'd be in my mind. And then you just got to say, I've got the rest of my life to get on with. I've got to have three kids. So you just got to get on with it. But it takes you a bit. It took me a bit anyway. They would get help, but I think the Newcastle supporters helped me immensely through the whole thing. So they were always nice. And so, and then after about 6 months, you just start a new life. That was it.
You mentioned there the testimonial. What was that like to see, you know, I think it was about 28,000, 29,000 turned up. What was that night like?
It was a bit sweet, but it was nice because I had all the family there. My brothers and my mum and dad and my favourite uncle and auntie and that sort of thing. And the two cousins and they were quite amazed. And I wish I'd kept them. You know, loads of the doormen came and gave their pay packets and says, I want to work for nothing for you. So I finished up with about half a dozen pay packets. And then Fenton Braithwaite, he was a director, he says, this will be an expensive night for you because you've got a big family with you. He gave me £50. I said, no. And so things like that just made the whole thing. I went back to the village in Dinnington and the fellow with the bay horse just said, bring all your family and we'll open as long as they want to have a drink. This is about 2 a.m. So the whole thing was quite emotional, and to be fair. But it was nice. It was a bit lovely memories of the whole thing.
And you've kept in touch with some of your teammates over the years. What's it like when you meet back up with them, whether it's the Fairs Cup, Stu, or what was it like, you know?
It's always nice to see them, you know, because I always got on well with Davy Craig and Ian McFall, Bobby Mincar. But, you know, I always got on well with everybody, so it's always nice to see them. We always have a good laugh, so it's nice. Frankie Clark as well. And Supermac, he comes, if I'm guessed, he comes and sees us. So it's always nice to look, made, do a bit of reminiscing. So it's been always been nice.